Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, and I'm excited to welcome the program UFC star and Dancing with the Stars contestant Paige Van Zandt. Paige, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Oh, I tell you, I was looking at your story and think about, you know, starting out, you were involved in dancing, and then how'd you become a UFC fighter, especially yourself? How, tell us that story.
Yeah, you know, actually, my dad was the one who convinced me to try a class, and I was training just for fun all the way until I got into college. And at the time, I just wanted to get my degree and get a, you know, go to school. And then I ended up taking a pro fight to help me pay for school. And I ended up winning it, which was a surprise to me. And then I decided, you know, I can go back to school whenever I want to. And I might as well give this a shot. And I ended up really going for fighting, and it worked out well for me.
Well, it definitely did work out well for you. And amazing to see the growth of UFC, isn't it, in the last 10 years? I mean, just it's just blowing up with sponsorship and coverage and everything.
It is. Everyone's really getting behind MMA and the UFC. I mean, there's still a few people out there that are unfamiliar with it, but it's becoming one of the biggest sports out there. It's a sport that's in absolutely almost every country.
Yeah, definitely. And okay, Dancing with Stars, how can we help you out this Monday? Tell us the story again. I know my flagship station in Pittsburgh's not going to be rooting for you because, again, of Antonio, but tell us specifically what's going on and all that. Yeah.
Yeah, tonight I'm going to be doing two dances. The first one, we open the show. Me, Mark, and one of the two members are doing a trio, and it's super, super fun. It's a samba, so it's very exciting. And then later in the evening, me and Mark Salas are doing a more like burlesque risque number. So it's one of the more exciting ones I've done, I would say. So tonight is some of my favorite dances I think I've ever done. So hopefully people tune in, and you can vote. Voting opens at 5 p.m. Okay. You can go to facebook.com/votedwps.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about your dance partner, Mark. He is so amazing how he makes people so much better at what he does. I mean, I know you're talented already and an athlete, but it's amazing what Mark can do in choreographing and teaching you. Don't you agree? It's just amazing, his ability.
It's amazing. Oh, my gosh, he's amazing. The fact that we perform on Mondays and then he only has Tuesday to put a whole concept together, a whole idea, a whole dance, a whole everything together on a Tuesday. And he starts teaching it to me on Wednesday. And it's insane how fast his brain works. And he's so, so creative. I'm so happy that I got partnered up with him.
So what do you think of your chances? Do you think you can make it to the get all the way and win this thing?
Gosh, you know, I hope so. But I just really hope people tune in tonight and can see me dancing. It's really a great routine tonight. And the fact that I have had so much support has been amazing. Just coming over from the UFC, having so many people support me in the dance world has been great. And I don't know, I hope people tune in so they can see that there's so much more to being a fighter than just being violent and bloody. We're very talented in other areas as well.
Well, definitely. I agree for sure. As I consider us in kind of the same field. I mean, meaning I was a professional wrestler for over 9 years and did the minor leagues of pro and all that stuff. I saw Ken Shamrock trained you. I wrestled Dan the B. Severn and a lot of the different minor league tours back in the day as a pro wrestler. So I understand boxers, wrestlers, UFC, all are the same. We're crazy in ways. We don't mind getting beat up a little bit to go out there and entertain the crowd. Isn't that
exactly.
True? Yeah, exactly, for sure. Now, yep. I think your fans, UFC fans, are going to help you take this thing because, again, explain to our audience out there how crazy they are for their stars in the UFC. Yeah, tell us.
Yeah, I'm so happy that. What was that?
And I was just saying, just tell us how crazy and hungry these fans are to vote for you, and so you can keep going on.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I need the support from the UFC community, and I've had a lot of people jump behind me, and it's been amazing just to bring all the UFC fans over to Dancing with the Stars and have their support. And at the same time, I hope I get more fans to come over to the UFC. That's the ultimate goal. I want people to know about our support and know what MMA is and what the UFC is. So hopefully I keep getting those votes to stay on Dancing with the Stars and be a good representation of the UFC.
Have some of the stars reached out to you and are helping you with the vote and kind of tweeting with you to see your success for this sport?
They are, yes. It's really neat to see, like, I had Luke Rockhold come here and actually go to a show. I've had Chuck Liddell out here. I've had a lot of support from the UFC community and a lot of people posting for me and supporting the cause. So it's been very exciting.
Most definitely. Now, tell us specifically, for our listeners out there, you as a fighter, as a USC, area, how are the rankings, like different like weight titles and stuff like that? Who do you compete with in UFC?
Yeah, so I'm in UFC strawweight. So there's two women's weight classes in the UFC. Ronda Rousey is a well-known fighter. She's a bantamweight, so she fights two weight classes above me, and I'm a strawweight. So the champ in ours is Joanna Jędrzejczyk. There's a lot of really talented strawweights.
And your goal someday is not just to win Dancing with the Stars, but be the champ as well, right? You're training to get that opportunity someday, right?
Yeah. Exactly. You know, I'm still young, but I'm going to fight my way up to the UFC championship soon. And of course, I want to do as best as I can while I'm on Dancing with the Stars right now.
And so the funny thing I was reading about you is, again, you grew up in that your parents owned a dance studio. So that's interesting in a lot of ways. So was your mom a very good dancer as well?
Yeah. You know, my mom was a dance teacher actually her entire life. So it's really neat that I kind of got to get back to those roots. I feel like me dancing in middle school and growing up has really paid off now that I've been on Dancing with the Stars. It was really for a purpose. And it's nice that I get to go back to those roots because I haven't done it in so long.
You're a great role model for girls and women out there that they can be both rough and elegant at the same time. And that's fantastic, especially what the women's division in UFC has been able to do. Best place we can follow you and find information on you, Paige. I know 5 p.m. Eastern, we got to start voting and all that stuff. Where's the best place we can find info?
5 p.m. Eastern, start. Yeah, you know, 5 p.m. is the best way is when you start voting, but the best way, I post the links on my Twitter and on my Instagram, so you can follow me. I am Paige Van Zandt, UFC, on both Twitter and Instagram.
All right, well, fantastic. Best of luck tonight, and let's hope that you continue all the way to winning, and oh, maybe just face it. Let's go to the finals, you against Antonio. That'd be pretty cool. All right, take care now. Good talking to you.
Yes, that would be great.
See you later.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Paige. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter, at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley Facebook, and I'm excited to welcome the program. I think we do have Kendra on the line. Celebrity Kendra Wilkinson, WeTV star Kendra on top, and also musician Kendra. Thanks for calling, and how are you?
Oh man, thanks for having me. It's a good day, you know. My song just got released, my season finale tonight, and the music video released tonight.
Oh, it's so real, Kendra, and I think that, again, watching snippets of your show and stuff, now finally you get to show the true who you are with Kendra on top. Wouldn't you agree, what you're truly doing now, who you are as a person?
Yeah, yeah, and you know what? I'm exactly where it ends tonight, my season finale, is actually exactly where I'm at in my life. Like, you know, what now? Like, what, you know, everything kind of, you know, I'm 30. You know, I've been on TV for 13 seasons or whatever, however long it is, five, whatever. And you know, this kind of just puts the period at the end of the sentence type of thing. It kind of ends a chapter and, you know, kind of just, you're going to get the feeling of like, okay, this is, wow, she's been through a lot. This is where she is now. And we kind of hope it remains that way for her, you know, and I feel the same way. I feel like I hope this remains the way it is, you know, but as life, those, you know, life does throw you curveballs. So you never know what could happen, but I just hope that, you know, as much as you're going to hope, that things just remain this way. It's a happy place, It's very fun place, and that's why we're ending this season with my music video, because that's where I'm at. I'm fun again.
And see, that's the thing, and we'll talk about the music video. And I mean, the music video, give them a preview, but also I'm going to play your song, parts of your song after our interview's over. The thing I see, Kendra, is that when I listen to this, it's just, again, you're ready to go to a next chapter. And can you give us a little bit of a preview of what you think that chapter looks like? What is your plan? I business coach people. I talk to entrepreneurs all the time and celebrities, and
yeah,
what that vision is. What is the vision for Kendra?
Yeah, you know, here's the thing. Like, you know, I've been on TV for a very long time now, like, 13 years or so, whatever it is. And
yes.
And every year it's not promised, you know. I have to repitch the show. I have to go through the whole, you know, what are we selling? What are we doing? You know, and so it's, you know, every year it's not promised. So this year, I mean, next year is not going to be promised. I never even, you know, dreamed of any of this. So it's, I'm just doing the best I can with the cards that I was given, dealt. And, you know, I'm having a fun time doing it. You know, I'm owning it. And so, you know, now that the drama in my life is coming to a wrap, which is, mm-hmm. it is, I'm going into my 30s with my head held high and with knowledge under my belt. I can kind of, I want to, you know, become a little bit more powerful in the producing world. Mm-hmm. you know, TV is dying now. Now it's time to kind of, I want to, be a part of producing, you know, young stars who are up and coming into the, you know, the whole, like, digital world, and
yes.
I kind of want to produce things like that, you know?
You want to be behind the camera. You want to understand. You want to help others through what you went through in your career in a variety of different areas and say, hey, here are the choices. I can mold others. I can create others. I can create stars, and I can become more, even more of a brand than I already am. That's what it sounds like to me.
Right, right. And, you know, exactly. See, I'm an idea person. So what you just said to me just brought me a new idea. Like, you know, I have a life that I just unfolded in front of millions of people, like, worldwide, you know, for years. And you just gave me a new idea by, you know, helping others kind of, like, maybe tell their story, you know, online and kind of, you know, with people watching. It kind of, you know, it kind of makes or breaks you, you know, and that's
yes.
what it's self-reflection, because you have fans that are telling you like it is, like, yo, you need to be nicer to your hubby. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. You get that feedback from the Twitter sphere and the Instagram fear, you saying, oh my gosh. And you have to have thick skin, Kendra, because it's just, it's really being in the public eye all the time. You're just getting hit up all the time. You got to say, do I really want to look at this message? Do I really want to look at this? And that's, I guess, culminating to your video and song. Give us a preview. I'm going to, about the song. I listened to the song. Really seems like you're saying this is it. I'm tired of other people telling me what to do. This is going to be the Kendra.
Yeah, you know, I'm just a fun person overall. And, you know, I've had a dramatic couple years, and I think I'm now in that place. I just want to prove that I'm back to that place, that fun place. And I feel that way. I'm just always happy. I'm always laughing. I'm seeing the light, you know, and I'm just having a great time. So I wrote this. I helped, you know, of course I had help writing the song, producing and stuff like that. But we wrote the song out of a story, you know, of mine. Like, you know, I'm a mom. I'm 30. I still got it. I still want to know if I got it. And if my friends are going to come out with me, you better go hard with me or go home, you know. And I'm a flirt. I still want to know if I still got it. And once I know I still got it, I go home and I'm, you know, I come back a better person, you know, to my husband. So it's kind of like I'm a flirt,
yeah.
You know, and I am, like, I go out, you know, I have a girls' night out, I flirt, and I come home, and I'm like, okay, I'm happy, I still got it, let's have sex.
And see, there you go. And then see, that's basically who you are, trying to say, you know what, I'm not the person that's living the two identities. However, I want to have fun. I still want to be who I am. Yet, when I go home, it's what you see on television. It's the family, the husband. It's the normal thing that the normalcy. However, when Kendra is on stage, that's a different Kendra. And that means stage meaning all the different things that you do.
Right, but you know what? But what I realized when creating the song, it wasn't actually far off from creating a reality show because with the challenge with creating a reality show is the timing that you have to tell your story and the chapter you're in and the feelings that you have. So you only have a certain amount of episodes to tell the exact place that you're in your life, and you have to do it in an artsy type of way, creative way. You have to tell the story within, you know, the feeling that you had, and you have to tell that in 30 minutes, a couple of episodes. And the same thing with a song. Like, I had this vibe and this feeling and this story that I wanted to share, and you only had, 2 minutes to tell it. So it's pretty much similar, you know?
It truly is. And then you see whenever you have creative control on the show, and when you don't have creative control on the show in 13 years of television. And it seems like you want to take more and more control, Kendra. That's what I hear from
you know,
talking
the girl, the Girls Next Door, I didn't have any control. I was just kind of like, I'm just partying, film me, you know. With my show, I have full control. And control meaning, like, I make sure and I tell my story exactly the way I feel. So whatever you see, whatever the feeling that you get that I'm going through is exactly the way what I went through. So in that case, I have zero regrets on what I'm sharing because I can own it. And if you ask me about it, I can say, I was feeling that way and this is why, you know? So I have zero, you know, it's all me, you know?
Exactly. All you. So now, once I say goodbye to you, I'm going to play your song for our audience. And they are going to go ahead and purchase it, help you out. Watch tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern, Kendra on Top on Wii. We can follow you on all the different places. Tell us where we can follow you, Kendra.
Follow me on Twitter, Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, you know, YouTube now. My music video will be launched on YouTube tonight, tomorrow, everywhere, iTunes. I'm haunting
you. Tell a story. Yes, exactly. And telling a story, Kendra, the more you tell a story, the more people are interested and the more people are going to tune in. That's basically it. And that's why you are unlike other ones that say that do reality shows, but they're not true reality. That's the key.
Right. This is a real story. This isn't like this is a real true story. And, you know, you can't fake, you know, my grandma dying. You can't fake having a baby. You can't fake, you know, any of the stuff. Like, this is real. This is a real story. And I thank everybody for watching.
All right. Well, Kendra, thanks for calling and take care.
Thank you. Good luck with the song.
All right. Tell you, I'm about to tune in right now to
party on.
Party on. Take care.
Call me a flirt. Bye, guys.
Every dollar that you're making while you're speeding, I'll be breaking. When you go home. like me, gotta play hard like me. Set your dirty mind free, 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 free. When you go hard like me, gotta play hard like me. Set your dirty mind free. I'm on a bad bitch mission. Gotta get it out my system. I'm a bad bitch, gotta get it out my system. I'm on a bad bitch mission. Gotta get it out my system. I'm a bad bitch, go hard like me. Gotta play hard like me. Set your dirty mind free.
Welcome to Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. I'm excited to welcome to the program Catherine Bell from Hallmark's channel's Good Witch. Catherine, thanks for calling, and how are you?
Hey, sure, Neil. I'm good. How are you doing?
Fantastic, Catherine. I mean, to think about this role and how this role has been such a success. When you were first approached for this, were you surprised in that way? I know you're involved a lot into it, but did you think it would be such a successful show?
I had no idea. I mean, it was, you know, it was just a one-time TV movie for Halloween called The Good Witch, and it did great. People loved it. So the next year, I had another break from Army Wives, and they said, hey, you want to make another one. We said, sure. So we, all of a sudden it became this annual tradition of Good Witch movies. They made 7 of those. And then when Army Wives ended, they grabbed me for a series, and now we're on season 2. It's crazy. It's like, it's unheard of. Amazing.
Exactly. So it started out as a TV movie, and we all know how witches have success, especially if they're good, as we've seen the roles in the history of witches. Did you look back in that a lot and look at the days of how the successful witches and how they did so well on TV and stuff?
I did. I certainly grew up with, you know, Bewitched, and yeah, absolutely. There's definitely something, there's a pull there. Obviously, people are interested in that. What is that? Is it real? Is it possible to have those kind of powers? And I think that's kind of the question on the show is she, or isn't she really a witch? She just knows things about people, maybe more intuitive than others, or maybe she actually is a witch. There's always a broom in the corner of my kitchen. There's a little clue for you.
And so, and that role. So you say growing up, you like that. Which would you model yourself most after in your character, would you say, in a way, looking at the history of witches?
I did have a lot of Bewitched in my life when I was growing up. Love that show. So much fun.
Yeah, that was one of my favorite shows for sure as well. Now let's talk about your character and describe that, what makes her different to some of the other witches and Cassandra, Cassie Nightingale.
Well, you know, Cassie definitely has this incredible attitude about life that I always wish I had more of. She sees the best in people and makes the best of any situation, no matter how bad. You know, somebody could come in who might appear to be even evil, you know, that's coming in to stay at her bed and breakfast. And now she just knows that there's another side or another layer or something underneath that. She helps bring that out. Or she just knows the right thing to say to send somebody on a journey that you know, transforms their life. And it's always fun to watch how she connects those dots. Like, hey, take this box and and deliver it down the street. And then she'd say the person runs into someone who becomes the love of their life, or, you know, whatever. It's just always something.
Yeah.
Exactly what that person needed.
So you're giving cheer to people that need it and helping people throughout in your show, for sure.
Exactly. Right? Exactly. And people tell me that it just makes them feel good. It's like, oh, I like that show, and I just feel better about things. I love that. I don't think there's enough of that on TV, you know, that you can watch and feel good, you know, watch with your kids or whatever, not have to worry about some deep, dark, inappropriate thing.
Yeah, that's what's so great about the Hallmark Channel is that, you know, if you put your kids or the families in front of the television, you know the show's going to be a good show, and it's going to be appropriate for the whole family to watch, which
is kind of
becoming a dying breed for now. Yeah.
It really is. And also, it's not just a kids show, because there's, you know, a lot of those around, but it's something that parents can enjoy as well, and you're not racing to grab the remote to quickly change the channel because, don't look at that.
And I love the Hallmark Channel, and the fact that what they're able to do is, in their connections and things, is they have family. That's what we need. We need to sit down, Catherine, as a family and watch a show. So the adults are interested in it. The kids are interested in it. Everyone's interested in it. So there becomes dialogue and themes and things, and then you can discuss things with your family after the show.
Yeah. You know, it's so true. So often we're all on our, you know, iPads or whatever. Everyone's off on their own, doing their own thing in their own little world. So it is, I know I watch with my kids, and even though it's me, they kind of forget that, and they're looking at Cassie Nightingale, and they're kind of like, wow, how did that happen? And, you know, and we do. We have that moment of bonding and just being able to have that experience together.
And did you, so I was kind of reading up on this. You came up with this idea then, correct? You were in the show. Am I correct?
The show? No, actually, the show, the first Good Witch movie came to me just as a, you know, hey, do you want to do this? And it was great because I was on JAG at the time, and I was surprised that they thought I could even do this. But Orly Adelson, who is one of our executive producer, she had heard that this character is maybe more like my personality than the character that I'd been playing on JAG for 9 years. So they offered me the role, just kind of sight unseen, and I was like, wow, how did you know that I could even play this? So I thought that was kind of cool. Just loved the script, dove in, and it just kept going from there.
And I guess the fan mail and the tweets and all the different things and the appearances, and especially when Halloween comes, you're a busy person, aren't you?
Mm-hmm.
Promoting this show for
yes.
sure.
Definitely. Yeah, so much social media now. I'm always trying to connect with fans on Twitter and Instagram and keep them posted on what's happening, and try to live tweet as much as I can while the show's on, you know, just staying connected to the people that are keeping our show going.
Exactly. So Good Witches airs on Sundays, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central. What should we say?
Oh, I'm sorry. You broke up the line. What should we?
No, I said you're gonna see a transformation from your character, correct? What's gonna happen with her throughout this season, correct?
Yeah. This season's kind of about, you know, is Cassie ready to fall in love? Is she ready for, you know, is it Sam? And then there's other people that come in that distract her, and she's just not sure who it's gonna be or if she's ready for anyone. But definitely looks to be going in that direction this season. So some romance is brewing.
All right, well, fantastic. We can follow you on Twitter, all those best places, right? Correct, to find
Absolutely.
Out information.
Really you CB know. On Twitter, yep.
All right. Well, fantastic, Catherine. Thanks for calling, and everyone
Great.
Needs to tune in
Thank
this
you.
Sunday, 9 p.m. Eastern, to The Good Witch. Take care.
Thanks,
See
you too.
All right.
Bye-bye.
You're okay. All right, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show. We'll be back in just
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Total Celebrity Show. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, and I'm excited to welcome the program from A&E's Bates Motel, Freddie Highmore. Freddie, how are you, and thanks for calling.
Lovely to speak with you. Thank you for having me on. I'm doing pretty well.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you're doing pretty well. With the success of the Bates Motel for a few years, you've been really, I'm sure you're excited about how it's done so well.
Yes, no, it's an exciting episode tonight too. It really is the culmination of of four seasons' work, really. It's pretty exciting.
Yeah, the season finale tonight, and I know that I don't want to spoil it for people that, you know, DVR these things and stuff like that, but really it's going to be exciting tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern to tune in to Bates Motel. Now, Freddie, let's kind of go into the story a little bit about how you get, especially, you know, with some of your other acting experiences as a child actor, to be asked to do this role. Tell us a little bit about that story.
Yes, I guess it was something I couldn't really say no to. You know, the opportunity to work with Vera Farmiga, who's obviously exceptional in this and has been phenomenal for a while, and Kerrion Carlton, whose stories for the show have always focused on the nuance, as opposed to, as you know, it's a real character-driven storytelling as opposed to being focused on the plot. So I'm just lucky to be a part of it.
Well, it definitely seems like you're lucky to be a part of it, Freddie, and it's and all that. And how much research did you do about Norman Bates, especially going back to the days of Norman Bates and kind of looking back at this character?
Yes, I've rewatched Psycho before every season, and it's never been an attempt to mimic exactly what Anthony Perkins' performance was. You know, his version of Norman was so iconic, but we've tried to do our own thing at the same time whilst remaining faithful to what came before.
And that definitely seems like it in so many ways. And what do you think characterizes Norman Bates? I remember the days of Psycho, but, you know, you got to bring me back in certain ways, Freddie. What characterizes you to change your persona to Norman?
I think that this season his development has been particularly interesting. I think it's always grounded in a sense of normality, which hopefully makes Norman remain likable and retains our sympathy, but he doesn't see himself as being bizarre or kooky or a serial killer. Really, he thinks, even though he's deluded, that he's doing the right thing with the big act that he did at the end of episode 9, and it's a real act of love. And of course, at the same time, he's become a bit more manipulative this season, a bit more Machiavellian, I always like to say, but ultimately, what the show comes back to is that codependency between mother and son, and how far these two people are prepared to go for one another.
And that's it. And so for the season finale, we're finally going to see what Norman's going to do next, right? And we're going to be shocked, aren't we?
Yes. Yes, indeed. yes, it's going to be... there's so many things that you want to say.
You don't want to say anything because I catch it.
I'll just ruin it. But one sort of little aside is that Norman has never met Chick, and tonight may be the night.
That's wild. And Freddie, I mean, I'm sure you're so happy about your transition from child actor to today in so many ways, looking at, you know, at Charlie and the Chocolate Factory and some of the other movies you were in as a child, and to now transition yourself into this tremendous role and having acclaim, and your career just is continuing to blossom for sure. I'm sure you're very happy about that.
I feel like I've been lucky, and it's just Bates Motel has been such a good experience.
And it's great about platforms like this, right? Like A&E for programming now. It gives actors so many more opportunities than before. So many different platforms and opportunities to show their talent and not have limited choices for audiences out there.
Yes, and I think what Kerrion Carlton has done too, along with A&E, is allow the TV format to flourish with this show in building on the sort of real nuances of characters and allowing the time for huge long scenes to take place that don't need to be, you know, trimmed down anymore. There's not as much a pressure of,
you know, making a five, what really should be a 5-6 minute scene into 1 minute so you can move on to the next plot point. And they've really let things breathe this year. And it's key because, you know, what's so important in the show, I think, is are those beats, those moments between characters, what's unspoken as opposed to what's actually said.
So when you think about and that's such a great point, Freddie, when you think about the horror movies and things like that of nowadays, and now Norman Bates, this is what we love, man. When I grew up, not as much as you, Freddie, that I grew up with loving Freddy Krueger, loving all these villains and how it's suspense waiting for us to jump out. And now we're bringing that back because I think horror lost its power. And I think that A&E is bringing it back, and that's phenomenal for the audience, I think.
Yes, and it's horror, but not in terms of feeling the need to scare someone every minute in order to keep their attention. It's the psychological thrill, which goes back to the origins, really, of Hitchcock and what made Psycho so successful then, and what's kept it so successful now is that it never relied on those special tricks or effects or anything other than being invested in the two main people in the movie.
All right, so everyone needs to tune in tonight, 9 p.m. Eastern, to A&E for the season finale. Now, Freddie, I was seeing that you're not on Twitter. Is there a place we can follow you and stuff like that? Or do we have to follow the Twitter handle for the Bates Motel?
Well, I guess so. I know. I'm sorry. I haven't got any of the... I'm not up to speed with my social media, so...
You have such a fan club, man.
Maybe one day.
Yeah.
Not yet.
But you have such a huge fan club, it doesn't matter. They tweet for you. That's the good thing, right? You go out and you go, and if you check Twitter, you're all over the place because people love you. And they love Psycho and they love Norman Bates. So there you go. So you're...
Oh, well, thank you. I haven't been on myself, but I'll take your word for it.
You got to take it. I mean, I was looking, and I said, that's what I'm going to tweet out, the fan pages and the official A&E Twitter about our interview. So we'll get it out there. But again, I appreciate you coming on the show, Freddie, and best of luck in your ventures, and we'll see where it goes in your career. And I'm going to definitely have to catch up in the four seasons, and that's what's so great about the ability nowadays. We miss something, we'll be able to catch up. So thanks again for calling, and best of luck.
Yes, exactly.
All right, take care.
All right, cheers.
Cheers. Take care, Freddie. See ya. Bye-bye.
You.
You're welcome. Bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Author's Corner. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor. And do we have our guests on the line? Philip Norman? Philip, are you on the line?
Yes, I'm on the line.
Oh, Philip, so I'm excited to welcome to the program best-selling author Philip Norman, author of Paul McCartney, The Life. Philip, again, thanks for calling, and
my pleasure.
The work that you've done before and now to get the opportunity to write about Paul McCartney's life must be an amazing pleasure, isn't it?
Well, it was a big surprise, actually, because I'd written a biography of John Lennon. I was thought to be always pro-John Lennon, which meant not being pro-Paul McCartney. But to my surprise, he gave me his approval to write this book. It was a big surprise.
Definitely seems like a big surprise for sure, and the cover and the time we have about all that's covered in this book, it just must be amazing. So what kind of things should we expect from this biography if we pick it up, for sure?
Well, I think it's a different Paul McCartney from the one that the world thinks it knows so well after all these years. He seems to be blessed with everything, huge talent, huge charm, amazing looks. You would think that that would make someone very self-satisfied, very smug. In fact, McCartney turns out to be, in his own way, as insecure as John Lennon used to be. So, you know, getting into his 70s, he's still out there almost every night on the stage, doing 3 hours without an intermission, without even taking a sip of water, because he still needs somehow to prove himself.
That's amazing. Where do you think he gets this drive from?
Well, he has an amazing constitution. Liverpudlians are very tough people anyway. It's just simply he doesn't know anything else. But the music, he's made of music, it keeps coming. But also it's the desire for that still, the love, the adulation. the more people have, the more they seem to want. It's not something that ever satisfies you. He also wants to go on. He wants to work with the latest musicians. He wants to go on showing that he's, you know, of the moment. He's not just a historical treasure.
And what would you say the difference between writing about John Lennon and Paul McCartney, in your opinion?
They are strangely similar people, very different, obviously, in so many external ways, but each had something of the other. You know, history says that Paul was the tuneful, the cuddly, the cute Beatle, and John was the avant-garde, the edgy Beatle. But actually, Paul was into avant-garde music, music concrete, that kind of thing. Before John, he told John about it, and then John got into it, and of course, John met Yoko. But John, who was supposed to be so tough and so cynical, was actually very romantic and very sentimental. So each had something of the other. And that meant that one could finish a song that the other had started to write. The other one could finish it.
That's so interesting. And was Paul able to share some of his memories of John Lennon in the book?
He has over the years. I mean, after the Beatles broke up, it was a horrible time for Paul. Again, everyone thought, oh, Paul doesn't care about this. He just thinks about himself. You know, his ego is enormous and it will survive the breakup of the Beatles. Paul had a traumatic time in the breakup of the Beatles. He was sidelined by the other three over the appointment of a manager, Alan Klein. He really almost had a breakdown and he almost turned to alcohol as well and became an alcoholic. And again, nobody would think that Paul would, you know, be suffering, but he suffered very badly. And he went on, of course, he founded a new band, but it took a real struggle for that band to get, you know, acceptance, whereas the other three Beatles did rather well while Paul was still struggling.
And it took him longer in time. Do you think Paul learned a lot from his mistakes and specifics in so many ways?
He learned a lot from the Beatles' mistakes, yes, he did. He set up a business. The Beatles had a business called Apple, which collapsed. You know, it had some very good things in it, but it collapsed under a weight of freeloaders and con artists and people just using their money. Paul set up a company called MPL, which started to buy publishing rights of other artists, which is a hugely successful company. That's something he learned from the Beatles.
Wow. Wow. And I'm sure fans of Paul McCartney can't wait to pick up this book. And I'm sure you've gotten a lot of feedback before this release, right? People talking about it, saying, you know what, this book is something as a Beatles fan and as a Paul McCartney fan I have to have, right?
I hope so. Well, it's really, it doesn't plod through the whole story of the Beatles again, but it really goes into detail about the years after the Beatles. Now, the Beatles broke up longer ago than John Lennon's lifetime. And the years of the 70s and the 80s for Paul were so full of incident. He worked with so many other people like Stevie Wonder, Michael Jackson. He had terrible experiences. He was locked up in Tokyo. He was in jail in Tokyo for 9 days.
Oh, my.
How could that happen to this wonderful, smiling, you know, one of the best boys in pop? He's suddenly in jail with convicted killers and mafiosi in Tokyo.
Wow. So that's the thing. We're going to find another side of Paul McCartney that has never been shared. And that's what
I think it's the real McCartney. And it's also much more endearing because, you know, he has his moments. But he's said to be very mean. In fact, he's been enormous.
He did drop again. You could purchase the book on Amazon and all finer bookstores. Somehow his line did drop, but you purchase the book in all finer bookstores and check it out. The author, Philip Norman, author of Paul McCartney, The Life. Really interesting conversation. Somehow we just did have a drop in the call, and we're going to have to say sayonara for today. Very, very interesting discussion with Philip Norman. Great guy for sure, and brings out another fantastic book. I guarantee it'll probably be another best-selling book. So pick up Paul McCartney, The Life. It's in all finer bookstores, and especially for our UK audience. They're very excited, but let me just see. I think we did get him back on the line. I just was doing a plug for you, Philip, for the book where we can purchase it and all that stuff. Did we all running out of time. Do you want to add one other specific that we were talking about?
Right. I don't know where I was when we broke contact.
Oh, yes. I was just saying that we need to pick this book up in all finer bookstores. It's available everywhere. If you're a Paul McCartney fan, it's a must. And if you're interested
Thank you.
In an unbelievable story, and Phil, another major thing about it is look at the success of your other books. You tell great stories, so people need to pick it up. So is there a place we can find information on you as well, Phil?
Well, on Google, of course. But my other books, is, you know, America's always been very supportive of my work. So my book Shout is still around, and that came out in the early 1980s. And the early 1980s, and become a Rolling Stones as well. The Stones were very much mixed up with the Beatles. They weren't enemies. People thought they were, you know, terrible rivals, but they were very, very close friends, actually.
Mm. And I was talking about one of our stations in the UK. That's it's an internet station, but it has a huge reach, and they're really going to be excited that you came on the show for sure. So I appreciate you calling, and best of luck, Philip, in all your ventures. And everyone needs to pick up the book, okay?
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Hulk. Okay, bye-bye.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Author's Corner. You can check me out on Twitter at Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, Google Plus, and also on Periscope at Total Tutor. And I'm excited to welcome the program, New York Times bestselling author of The Highwayman, A Longmire Story, Craig Johnson. Craig, thanks for calling. How are you?
I'm good. Neil, do you have to say that every time you answer the phone?
What? Which one?
You that whole thing about the Twitter and everything. I go, wow, that's really good.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I get used to it, Craig. I've interviewed so many people, but you got to be self-promotion. It's all about it. And you did the same thing.
You
did the same thing, Craig. And that's honest to God truth. I talk to authors all the time, and they have this great idea, great story, and then it never sells at times. And as authors, they write book after book, and your career is completely took off from this series, and I'm sure you weren't thinking this was going to happen. You were writing just to love writing, right? Did you think you'd be a New York Times bestselling
author? Absolutely. And I mean, you know, well, you know, when you're a cowboy author in a town of 25 like that, you know, and then, you know, you start writing a book series about a, you know, the sheriff of the least populated county in the least populated state in America. I don't know if you're like serving the demographic for success, you know, in that particular situation.
No. So you went ahead, and what came up with this idea? So again, you're talking about a very small population you live in, and you, did you always want to write? Was this something you wanted to do, Craig?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Like, I mean, I came from a family of storytellers. Look, and it was just a question of making that transition, you know, from telling stories to writing stories, you know. And in many ways, you know, I kind of write the Walt books, you know, almost as if, you know, you were to, you know, walk into the Busy Bee Cafe and sit down at the stool, and Walt Longmire were to come in and sit down on the stool next to you and turn to you and say, "Here, let me tell you about what happened to me last month." At that point, I don't want you to even remember that you're reading a book. I want you to just fall into that world and be a part of it. And then, you know, in answer to your question, the previous question, you know, like, how did it all kind of start? It was a little bit of, like, you know, anti-CSI was a little bit of it. You know, about a dozen years ago, I ran into a DCI investigator, Division of Criminal Investigation investigator there in Wyoming, where we have, like, one crime lab in the whole state.
Okay.
And I asked him, I said, you know, how long does it take you guys to get DNA evidence? And he paused for a second, and he goes, "Is this a high-profile case?" And I said, "Yeah, let's pretend like it's a high-profile case." And he goes, "About 9 months." And so I said, "Well, that's not particularly honest what they're doing in these books and on television, is it?" And he goes, "No, it's not." And so I thought, well, maybe what if you did a procedural, you know, about the sheriff of this, you know, like, not very densely populated county and not very densely populated state. And Walt Longmire was born.
Wow. And before that, you were just writing just a dabble before that happened.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, my education was in writing, like that, and you know, and I, you know, I'd spend a lot of time, you know, traveling around. I mean, you know, saying that you want to be a writer is kind of like saying you want to be an astronaut. You know, I mean, the odds against you, you know, are pretty high. Like, so you kind of keep that kind of thing to yourself, you know, as a private little dream that you hope will happen. But, you know, there are two reasons why you become an author. You know, the first one is that you stumble onto a story that you think, you know, is really worth telling.
That's
good. That, you know, nobody's really told before. And then the other one is you run out of excuses. You know, I built my ranch, you know, I poured the concrete, stacked the logs, you know, built the barns, loading chutes, corrals, everything all myself. And then finally looked around and said, okay, you know, you always wanted to write a book. Now would be the time to sit down and get started on that. And that was The Cold Dish, the very first Walt Longmire book.
See, and that's fantastic. So once you did it, but again, I'm sure you had this huge marketing campaign, right, Craig? Right when you wrote, the book was coming out, you're like, after, and you have to tell me how the publisher, how you got a publisher, but you had this whole dream, like, okay, I'm gonna wake up tomorrow and I'm gonna be a New York Times bestselling author, right, Craig? That's what you thought.
Oh yeah, that was definitely the plan right there. That was what it was all about. I don't know. I mean, for me, it was just the dream was, you know, that I could get published and that I could sell enough books to where I could continue writing books. That was the only goal that I had, you know, in the whole process here, like that. And you know, and as far as like, you know, getting a publisher, I mean, first obviously, you know, you got to get an agent like that. And so
right.
I did some research, you know, and found some agents in New York that I thought, you know, might be interested in, you know, something that was more Western style of literature, you know. And, you know, more the Wallace Stegner, you know, the Larry McMurtry's, you know, the Walter Van Tilburg Clarks, you know, the Jack Schaefer's, that type of thing.
Right, exactly.
Dorothy Johnson. And so I tracked down a couple of agents, and the majority of them, you know, just kind of shut the door. And
said, no way.
And so it was like a Damon Runyon novel, you know, with the cigar smoke coming up over the transom and me trying to squeeze the manuscript, you know, through the door and the facing, you know. And then there was this one, you know, where she said, you know, I'm not going to get a chance to read it right away, but I will get, and I will give you a response. And by the time, you know, we got back to the ranch in Wyoming, she was on the answering machine saying, don't give this to anybody else, I want it. And then she passed it off to Catherine Quark, you know, who's the president of Penguin.
Oh, wow.
And she's the one that sat me down and said, you know what, you know, we really think you should think about, you know, doing this as a series. And,
wow.
And that's when I, with the knowledge of not even having had one book published, started arguing with the president of Penguin USA, going, well, I don't really think that's a good idea, but I've got some other ideas I want to bounce off of you. She said, why don't you go back to your ranch in Wyoming and think about this? And so I did. And, you know, it just seemed like, you know, that, yeah, there were probably some more stories that these characters could tell.
Right.
And that was the beginning of the series.
And I think when we look at the history, Craig, of all the Westerns and how popular they are, it's like they disappeared for so long. And what we're seeing is a reinvention of everything in entertainment. The things of the days that were, yeah.
Oh, well, historically, I mean, you look at it, generally we started a lot of the book tours up at the Buffalo Bill Museum up in Cody, like, and that's a guy that does not get the credit, I think, that he deserves as probably the guy that fomented the entire, you know, imagery of the romantic, epic American West all over the world.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, yeah, the books have been translated into, like, you know, a dozen languages, I do a lot of tours overseas and all of this. And, you know, I think he was really responsible for kind of, you know, implanting that imagery, you know, of the American West. And then, you know, about the time that it needed a little bit of a booster shot, I think, was in that post-war era, you know, when the rest of the world was kind of in a rebuilding phase after World War II, you know, we kind of inundated the rest of the world with all of our media, with
right.
all of our books, with all of our movies, and then later on with all of our television shows. Well, what was the predominant art form at that period in time?
Westerns.
It was the Western.
Yeah.
I mean, at one point in time, there were 142 Westerns on television, you know, and so...
Do you have a favorite Western on TV? Craig, do you have a favorite Western on TV?
Oh, yeah, there are all kinds of them that I really love. I like Paladin. I always loved Paladin. Like, I always thought that was a really great one with Richard Boone, like that, you know, where he was this traveling gunfighter, like that, who would lead the chess
That's
pieces,
cool.
you know, wherever he went, you know. I like the Westerns that have, you know, like a little bit more to them. I mean, we discussed a few of those, you know, some of the ones that we mentioned already, like at the Walter Van Tilburg Clarks, you know, with the
yeah.
Oxbow Incident, Track of the Cat, you know, Dorothy Johnson with the Hanging Tree.
Exactly.
Like Man Called Horse, you know. Jack Schaefer with Shane and some of these others. I mean, whenever you can take, you know, any kind of genre, anytime you can take, you know, a grouping of literature and then kind of elevate it a little more, you know, with a few more psychological aspects and more in-depth characters, you know, and sociability where you're like actually dealing with social problems, you know, that are contemporary like that, but you can kind of take a step back and deal with them as a Western, that makes them a little bit more interesting. And of course, you know, these books are contemporary Westerns, you know, they're
yeah.
modern day Westerns. And so, you know, they kind of hit all those hot topic issues that we're kind of dealing with in the American West now.
See, that's that's what definitely separates you from it. So again, great story, Craig. Because I know we both have a very busy day today, especially you with all your book tour and everything. You can kind of promote some of the places you're going to be. Again, this comes out today. So let's go right to the kind of what we expect for the next Highwayman.
The Highwayman's a little bit different. Like it's kind of a unique book in the sense that it's a straight ahead kind of ghost story,
right?
To a certain extent, you know what happens in this one is there's a highway patrolman by the name of Rosie Wayman who gets transferred to Troop G in the central part of Wyoming, where there's this beautiful canyon, the Wind River Canyon Scenic Byway, and the challenge there, of course, is that it's got granite walls on either side of it, about 2,500 feet tall, with a grade 5 rapids, whitewater rapids running through the middle of it, and then a little scenic byway running through the middle of it. And the old timers in the highway patrol in Wyoming used to refer to it as no man's land, simply because there was no radio frequency that could get down into there. So you'd go in one end, you weren't heard from until you came out the other side. Well, Rosie's there, and she starts getting these 1078 calls, officer needs assistance, 1078 officer needs assistance, around midnight, every couple of nights. The problem being that these 1078 calls are coming from this legendary Arapaho Highway patrolman, Bobby Womack, who died in a fiery crash in the canyon back in 1979. And so they keep trying to get her to go in for psychological evaluation. And instead, she calls up Sheriff Walt Longmire and Henry Standing Bear and says, hey, I need a little bit of help. And they head down.
Wow. So, interesting, a different twist to the series. And that's what you got to do, Craig, in continuing those things. Where's the best place we can find information on you, Craig, and purchase your books and learn more about you? Where can we go?
It is all over the place. Like, and I'm like a cockroach. You can't kill me. Like, so,
okay. So Amazon, you can purchase it on Amazon. You can purchase it on all the local bookstores. And what about your website, Craig?
Oh, yeah. CraigAllenJohnson.com. CraigAllenJohnson. JohnSon.com.
All right, and best of luck. And then the Netflix series again got renewed. Congrats! It continues to be out there, and I'll have to catch up with that on this summer. That's what my goal is, to catch up on all the shows I've been interviewing, just so I can watch them. So that's great. Congrats on the continued success of the brand. Okay, Craig.
Thank you, sir.
All right, take care. All right, see you later. Okay, bye bye. You're listening to Author's Corner, and we'll be back in just a moment.